The final argued case of the morning is Hoist Fitness Systems Incorporated versus Tough Stuff Fitness International Incorporated, appeal number 21-1978. Mr. Telscher, can you hear me?
I can, Your Honor.
Okay, very good. Please begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. 2.5 years into this litigation, 12 hours before trial was to start, Hoist admitted that it could not prove that our clients' machines produced a generally circular motion. This was against the backdrop of every asserted claim requiring the word pivotal motion, their expert admitting that pivotal motion is circular motion, this court having reviewed the claim construction, finding that the specification compelled that conclusion. In short, at no point did Hoist ever have a case against our client.
The district court, as I recall, Mr. Telscher, as I recall, the district court had to continually revisit the claim construction question multiple times over the course of the lead-up to the trial, right? There was the Markman, there was the summary judgment phase, there was the motion in limine where the court felt like it had to give a very specific instruction, and then finally at the status conference on the day before trial, the court felt the need to further clarify the construction it gave at the motion in limine stage. Is that right?
So I guess what I'm saying, made clear at every stage that it never changed its claim construction order once, from Markman through the motion in limine stage until that final status conference the day before trial. So it never changed its order.
Where in the record did the district court say, my construction has not changed one whit, despite the fact that I am using different articulations? Because as I understood at the Markman, the district court ultimately adopted plain and ordinary meaning. And then obviously at the Mill stage and the status conference, the district court said something different from just reaffirming plain and ordinary meaning.
So the cites to the record, Your Honor, to answer your specific question are appendix 11976.
Which volume is that?
You know which volume it is? I think it's sequential, though, isn't it? We'll get you the volume number, Your Honor, but the appendix site is 11976.
I believe that's volume three.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appendix
11978.
Okay.
And appendix 12321. The 12322.
Why don't you refer to us the specific language that you're relying on those pages?
I will, Your Honor. So as to the first site, having further considered the party's arguments regarding...
So you're looking at the bottom of the page under claim construction, just to orient us.
You know it's the bottom of the page. I just have it on a typed out outline, Your Honor. I don't have the page number. She's asking, is it at the bottom of the page so they can orient it? Middle of the page, Your Honor. First full paragraph.
Okay, it begins with having further considered the party's arguments. Is that this?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is, Your Honor. And the district court says, consistent with the plain and ordinary meaning, which their expert conceded was circular and consistent with the analysis set forth in the court's claim construction order. And it's absolutely consistent. There's never been a debate on this record that pivotal means circular. That is the plain and ordinary meaning of pivotal. It's their expert conceded and our experts confirmed, which means the only way they could have ever had a case is to have some basis for deviating from the plain and ordinary meaning of pivotal. And as this court found in its affirmance order, the specification of these patents compel, that was the words of this court, compel the conclusion that circular motion is required for
prisoner motion. Mr. Telscher, if I recall correctly, didn't the district court during the Markman's order rule reject your preferred specific construction because the district court did not believe it should adopt a highly strict interpretation of the ordinary meaning because of the four-bar linkage embodiment in the specification. And then at the same time, in denying your summary judgment motion, the district court again said it rejected the idea that the claim could not encompass any form of translational movement. Am I remembering the district court's statements correctly in the Markman and denial of summary judgment?
To an extent, Your Honor. So let me clarify what the record actually was with citations to the record.
Could you tell me which part of what I restated was incorrect?
So the court specifically rejected, at page 23 of the Markman order, the court specifically rejected Hoist's broad interpretation of plain and ordinary meaning. That would be the construction that was rejected that Hoist would continue to promote throughout the litigation. That's at page 23. It specifically says.
I understand the parts of the opinion you want to point to. I'm talking about the other parts of the order.
So we agree, Your Honor.
There was a point in that order where the trial court concluded that it could not adopt a highly strict interpretation of the term. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then in the denial of the summary judgment, in that order, the district court said it rejected Tough Stuff's preferred interpretation of excluding any amount of translational movement. Is that correct?
That is incorrect. That's incorrect. I mean, it's incorrect that that's what we were arguing. That's what the district court said.
That is, okay, that's what I'm trying to get at. So the district court did say those two things.
It did say those two things.
Okay.
But as to the first point where it says it was not going to adopt a highly strict interpretation of circular, on the same page that you're citing, if you read down, it rejects Hoist's construction of plain and ordinary meaning, saying that it was too broad. And it goes on to specifically say that all that's not required is perfectly pivotal. From that moment forward, this case turned on whether our client's motion was generally circular, generally concentric, generally circular, not perfectly circular or pivotal. That was the sole issue that was there at Markman. And at the eve of trial, they admitted they could not prove our client's motion was generally circular because it was not. As early as the preliminary injunction phase, and we cite this in our brief, they admitted that our client's movement was elliptical, not generally circular. So if their claims are all pivotal, pivotal requires circular motion, and they admit that at no point could they prove circular motion, that means they never had a case.
Mr. Telscher, the district court lived with this case for a couple years and knew full well what the arguments were and how the case evolved, and we're under an abuse of discretion standard here. I mean, can you just get to the heart of why, in your view, the district court was just way out of line and very unreasonable in choosing not to grant attorney's fees here, given the very deferential standard of review that you're up against?
So this court's precedent, Your Honor, and Justice Cam and Rothschild is clear. In order for there to be deference to his findings, the district court needed to make findings. The only findings on the merits of this case are one paragraph where, in a very general fashion, he says their claim construction position did not stand out in terms of its substantive strength. He doesn't say what the claim construction was, and he doesn't cite any support for it. So this court is a reviewing court.
Doesn't everybody know what the claim construction is, though? I mean, that's not in dispute. So why does the court have to identify what it was? It's the claim construction term you're talking about.
No, Your Honor, the claim construction that Hoist was advancing, that's not clear. We know what the district court held the claim construction was, but in order for them to prevail, they've got to show that their claim construction had some basis in the record. So that's error number one to answer the question. Error number two is this court's precedent and its legal error to place undue emphasis on the denial of summary judgment was legal error. Here, Hoist admitted summary judgment should have been granted. In view of the claim construction, generally circular motion, they admitted they couldn't prove it. So we have a case where two pages of the analysis, almost the entire analysis, denying fees is based on the improvident denial of summary judgment where it should have been granted. And the district court provides no analysis of why even, and that's exactly what happened in EcoBrands. In EcoBrands, summary judgment was defeated, and the district court found at trial there was no genuine issue of fact. Here, Hoist admits there was never a tribal issue of fact. And on that record, summary judgment should have been granted. We won as a matter of law.
Now, the district court judge disagreed with you, right? That there was no, that there was never a case at all, ever. There was no genuine issue of material fact from the beginning of the case, right? And it was only until later when it clarified its construction that became clear. I believe that's what the district court said. Why shouldn't we give that some credit?
The district court judge specifically said several times in the record, as I cited, he never changed his claim construction order. And therefore, the claim construction order remained the same. The machines never changed, and they admitted that they couldn't prove generally circular motion. There's no evidence. And in the order denying fees, it's two pages. The district court judge doesn't cite any evidence. He doesn't cite to the patents. Hoist doesn't cite to the patents. There is no evidence that supports any construction other than circular motion, which they confirmed they could not meet.
Mr. Telscher, you're into your rebuttal. Would you like to keep going? Would you like to reserve your time?
I will preserve my time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Sure. Okay, let's hear from Ms. Garner. Ms. Garner, I think you're still on mute. I cannot hear you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Mr. Telscher started out saying that 2.5 years into this case and 12 hours before trial, Hoist acknowledged that it could not prove infringement, and it did so because 2.5 years into this case and 12 hours before trial, the court changed its claim construction for the third time, the second time with regard to these particular terms.
Did the district court say each time that the construction it was now giving was entirely consistent with the construction it had given previously? And in that way, there wasn't really any migration of the claim construction?
The court did not say that. The court said that its new constructions were consistent and were clarifications of what it had said before. The court also said that with regard to the, in the motions in limine order in which the court initially changed the construction to read generally concentric motion was required, the court acknowledged that both parties had picked and chosen from its claim construction order the parts on which that they preferred. The court acknowledged that clarification was required because the court's claim construction order had indicated that while pivotal may refer to circular motion, that the analysis here is complicated by the fact of multiple pivot assemblies. The particular one that's discussed in the patent is the four-bar assembly. So the four-bar assembly has four physical pivots, each one of which causes circular motion, and together cause non-circular motion. So in light of that, the Tufts position at claim construction that the court should rule that the user support frame that was pivotally mounted had to move in a circle was wrong. The court agreed with Hoist on claim construction that the term pivotally mounted had its plain meaning. And in its discussion of what the plain meaning was, the court noted that some form of pivotal, rotational, and or arcuate motion is required by the plain meaning of the claims. The parties, October of 2018, Hoist prevailed on claim construction. Plain meaning, the court discussed generally concentric, but it had always been Hoist's position that claims, asserted claims have a limitation that imparts a degree of concentricity, but those were different claim terms. The pivot axis terms, there's a central pivot axis and user support pivot axis, and from day dot, from Hoist's complaint, Hoist noted that the user support frame has to move around concentric, common center, has to move around a pivot axis, either a user support pivot axis for some claims and a central pivot axis for some claims. So it isn't the case that Hoist believed that concentricity wasn't required, and that's why when the court ruled that there was a concentric requirement with regard to the pivotally mounted terms, that didn't upend Hoist's infringement case, because Hoist had shown with regard to the pivot axis claims that there was concentricity. So over the course of this case, issues of infringement were addressed again and again and again, and each time Hoist was successful. Hoist prevailed on claim construction in October of 2018. Not 2 months later, Tough Stuff made an emergency temporary restraining order motion, which Tough Stuff takes issue with Hoist relying on, but the issue of non-infringement came up in that motion because Tough Stuff, in order to prevail, would have had to show likelihood of success on the merits of non-infringement. The court rejected Tough Stuff's motion, found that it had been likely filed for an improper purpose, strongly rebuked Tough Stuff, and found that Tough Stuff's non-infringement argument was cursory. So 2 months after Hoist's claim construction win, Hoist overcame the TRO motion and, Tough Stuff had an opportunity to, but did not further its case with regard to non-infringement. 3 months after that, the judge ruled on summary judgment. And in rejecting Tough Stuff's fees motion, the district court described its summary judgment order as follows at Appendix 3. The court rejected Tough Stuff's position that as a matter of law, any piece of exercise equipment that includes a translational, i.e. sliding movement, cannot infringe. So again, Hoist's position was validated that it isn't the case that the fact of translational movement means non-infringement. And it's important to note that Tough Stuff summary judgment motion covered several terms, including the pivot axis terms, and with regard to the pivot axis terms, Hoist argued that the user support frames did move concentrically. And specifically with regard to pivotal mounting, the entirety of Tough Stuff's position on summary judgment was, we have a mechanism, a part of our mechanism, one part of a very complicated mechanism that moves laterally, therefore we don't infringe because the resulting motion is curvilinear. Now, Tough Stuff didn't say what curvilinear means. It's not a claim term. It hadn't been defined or construed. And the judge, the district court, rejected that position that as a matter of law, any piece of exercise equipment that includes the translational, i.e. sliding movement, cannot infringe. Again, Hoist's infringement position was validated. 3 months after that, the judge had to order Tough Stuff to produce evidence that it relied on with regard to non-infringement. And then 2 months later, so of course won that motion, and then 2 months after that, the parties briefed their motions in limine. And each party, Tough Stuff and Voice, made two motions that touched on non-infringement or non-infringement. And Hoist was successful with regard to both of its motions, and Tough Stuff's motions were both rejected by the court. The court contended that its clarifications of the claim construction were consistent with its original observations. However, at motion in limine, the district court rejected Tough Stuff's expert's position that Hoist was only entitled to a subset of the possible motion that a four-bar linkage could accomplish. The court rejected that position and said that Hoist, was not limited to only certain of the motion paths that a four-bar linkage can accomplish. So notwithstanding that the court modified its construction at motions in limine, at that point in time, Hoist was still entitled to all of the motion paths that could be accomplished by a four-bar linkage. So to take the position that from generally concentric, because you can find an average center of movement and including all of the motion paths that can be accomplished by a four-bar linkage, comparing that to a requirement that the motion of the user support frame had to be generally circular, there was a distinct and obvious and detrimental to Hoist's infringement position for the first time on the eve of trial change to the claim construction. Mr. Telscher claims that the district court did not support its opinion, but nothing could be further from the truth. Tustup also implies that the district court denied the fees motion on the sole ground almost only on the ground that it had previously denied Tustup's summary judgment motion, but that's an inaccurate portrayal of the district court's detailed opinion regarding fees, which makes clear that Tough Stuff's failed summary judgment motion was just one data point in the totality of the circumstances which the district court drew its conclusion that Tough Stuff was not entitled to fees. So it's not clear at what point, after which win, prevailing on summary judgment, prevailing on the TRO, prevailing on claim construction, summary judgment, motion in limine, at what point Hoist was supposed to determine that it couldn't move forward. It won each one of the motions that had anything to do with non-infringement or infringement in this case. And the detailed opinion of the district court reflects that. The opinion starts with a review of the procedural history relative to the pivotally mounted terms. On initial claim construction, the district court's fees order notes that the asserted patent's disclosure of multiple pivot assemblies presents unique issues about the exact movement path of mounted objects. So in considering the fees motion, the district court looked back at claim construction and acknowledged that, there were these difficult issues. This was not a no-brainer. The court in its fees order also noted that on claim construction, the district court had, quote, declined to adopt a construction of this term or others that would rely on a highly strict interpretation of pivotal, rotational, or accurate, or arcuate motion. And that's at Appendix 233. And that's the same reasoning on which Hoist relied to overcome the summary judgment motion, which the court addresses next in its order at Appendix 3. The order denying fees goes on to note that on summary judgment, the district court had clarified the claim construction order and denied TUSTF's request for summary judgment. The court, quote, the court rejected TUSTF's position that as a matter of law, any piece of exercise equipment that includes a translational, i.e. sliding, movement cannot infringe. The court also later in its order took tough stuff to task with regard to the absolute lack of evidence that it brought on summary judgment and its brazenness with regard to that lack of evidence. Now, tough stuff has taken the position that the district court held it to a standard that's inappropriate. This is the first time tough stuff's made that argument. Tough stuff didn't ask the court to reconsider its summary judgment on the basis of having applied the wrong standard. Tough stuff didn't tell the court in its fees motion that the court had applied the wrong standard on summary judgment. And in fact, the court didn't apply the wrong standard. The court asked tough stuff to point to specific ways in which the accused system did not meet the claim limitation. And the court found that tough stuff was wholly unable to do that and brazenly acknowledged that it lacked evidence to support its position. The court's order on fees goes on to discuss the motions in limine order and then to discuss the appeal at which the district court notes that the Federal Circuit acknowledged that the construction change.
Ms. Garner, your time is almost up. Do you have a final thought?
I do. The court considered the correct legal standard, summarized the parties' arguments, and set out its reasoning and analysis. The court's findings should be affirmed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now hear rebuttal from Mr. Telscher.
Your Honors, we're sympathetic to district court judges view, fee requests as a tail wagging the dog, but this court's precedent requires them to give an analysis. There's one paragraph on the merits with no citation to the intrinsic record. There's reliance on a summary judgment order that's in violation of this court's precedent in Eco Brands. They say, Hoist says that the court clarified its order. We cited the court, three citations where the court said it didn't change anything. Plain and ordinary meaning of pivotal was circular and that was used throughout. Their own expert admits that pivotal motion is circular motion and they conceded that they could never prove that. That meant there was no case. Hoist says it prevailed on summary judgment. That it prevailed on Markman. I would ask the court to read at least page 23, which is 3568 of the appendix, where the court expressly tells Hoist that its construction of plain and ordinary meaning was too broad. Quote, given this, it is unclear how Hoist contends its understanding of this claim term is consistent with the terms plain and ordinary meaning in the context of the intrinsic record. It goes on to state, for these reasons already stated, Hoist's understanding would be contrary to the teachings of the intrinsic record, which consistently uses the words pivotal, arcuate, rotational to describe the movement paths of the disclosed exercise machine as opposed to curvilinear or translational motion, which our client had. The court goes on to state on that same page, the only qualification of circular motion is it doesn't need to be perfectly pivotal or circular. The court's constructions at the mill phase and the eve of trial lifted the exact language from its Markman work. This construction never changed. Hoist says that it's supposed to win its summary judgment. I ask the court to look at Appendix 6278 of Hoist's opposition. This is the exact quote on how they defeated summary judgment, and the district court never grappled with this false statement. This is what they say. Notwithstanding this litigation-inspired waffling, the user support frame of each accused device was confirmed by a Hoist expert to move an arcuate, nonlinear, generally concentric path, citing the lens. They would later withdraw that expert report at the mill phase, saying it was irrelevant and they would concede on the courthouse steps that Lenz could never prove generally concentric motion. And they characterized this in the summary judgment opposition as the epitome of a fact dispute. The district court judge bought into it, just like in Eco Brands, where the district court judge denied summary judgment, it would later be revealed that there was never a genuine issue of fact. And by the way, they say that they won the mill order. The judge denied striking Lenz. He clarified the claim construction order. Hoist withdrew Lenz's report, saying it was irrelevant to prove generally circular motion. They struck their own expert report. To say that we lost the mill is false. Your Honors, I know these cases are tough. I know you want to give discretion. But this district court judge never analyzed the merits, provided this court with no citations to the record, and relied almost exclusively on a summary judgment denial that should have been a grant and was a nullity. For those reasons, Your Honor, we would ask you to respectfully reconsider. Our client was a much smaller competitor and got hammered on fees. That's why we filed that TRO on the ITC action. For those reasons, we respectfully ask the court to reverse and remand.
Okay, thank you very much. The case is submitted, and that concludes today's arguments.